Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, December 11th. President Obama reached a compromise with congressional Republicans to extend tax cuts at all levels, saying that because of this agreement, middle-class Americans won't see their taxes go up on January 1st. It's a good deal for the American people, said Obama. The president conceded that Republicans wouldn't budge on the upper income tax breaks that he sought to end, and a long political fight that carried over to next year might have been good politics, but it would be a bad deal for the economy. Democrats were in an uproar. How could the president cave on extending current tax rates to those couples earning more than $250,000? How could Obama cave on the estate tax, whose rate will now be only 35% on estates over $5 million, $10 million for couples, when it was supposed to go back to 55% for anything over $1 million. Obama chose a news conference on Tuesday to mock liberals for their sanctimonious opposition, but didn't spare Republicans, saying, quote, I felt that the middle-class tax cuts were being held hostage to the high-end tax cuts. I think it's tempting not to negotiate with hostage takers, unless the hostage gets harmed, then people will question the wisdom of that strategy. In this case, the hostage was the American people, and I was not willing to see them get harmed. That was Obama. Gee, thanks, Mr. President. I think a Gallup poll published on Wednesday found that 2/3 of Americans favored extending the tax cuts for all, and was also for another goodie, extending unemployment benefits for the long-term unemployed for another 13 months. Democrats couldn't argue against this last bit. But then the tax agreement, and I need to emphasize that some facets could change before it goes to a vote in both chambers early next week. In the biggest immediate stimulus, cuts the payroll tax by 2% through 2011, which will cost $120 billion, but for someone earning $40,000 means an extra $800 in their pocket, which most experts believe will go straight into the economy, as will unemployment benefits. The payroll tax cut is, in essence, a 2% pay raise. It's huge. Plus, while it is set to expire at the end of 2011, guess what? The following year is 2012. And who will be running for president? Barack Obama. Do you think he'll then want to take this big benefit away from the electorate? And so with this last item, you see how the whole package, when taken in total, will add at least $800 billion to our deficit. Figures are all over the board, but $800 billion plus is conservative. And as I go to post, all manner of other goodies are being added, including extensions of business tax credits, as well as extending various clean energy incentives, including a hefty credit for ethanol production. That's a lot of stimulus, sports fans. Yes, stimulus too. Charles Krauthammer, Washington Post, quote, Barack Obama won the great tax cut showdown of 2010, and House Democrats don't have a clue that he did. In a deal struck this week, the president negotiated the biggest stimulus in American history, larger than his $814 billion 2009 stimulus package. It will pump $1 trillion in borrowed Chinese dollars into the U.S. economy over the next 2 years, which just happened to be the 2 years of the run-up to the next presidential election. This is a defeat. Excuse me one second, I still have this cold I'm dealing with. Krauthammer continues, if Obama had asked for a second stimulus directly, he would have been laughed out of town. Stimulus, I was so reviled that the Democrats, stimulus one was so reviled that the Democrats banished the word from their lexicon throughout the 2010 campaign. And yet, despite a very weak post-election hand, Obama got the Republicans to offer to increase spending and cut taxes by $990 billion over 2 years. 2/3 of that is above and beyond extension of the Bush tax cuts, but includes such urgent national necessities as windmill subsidies. Krauthammer continues, no mean achievement. After all, these are the same Republicans who spent 2010 running on limited government and reducing debt. And this budget busting occurs less than the week after the president's deficit commission had supposedly signaled a new national consensus of austerity and frugality. Obama is no fool. While getting Republicans to boost his own reelection chances, He gets them to make a mockery of their newfound second-chance post-Bush Tea Party, this time with serious persona of debt-averse fiscal responsibility. And he gets all this in return for what? For a mere two-year postponement of a mere 4.6-point increase in marginal tax rates for upper incomes, and an estate tax rate of 35% that is somewhat lower than what the Democrats wanted. Bottom line, as Krauthammer writes, Obama pulled off the swindle of the year. Meanwhile, go ahead and give the 2012 election to the guy. As I look at it from a market and economic standpoint, yes, as PIMCO's Mohammed El Arian said in hiking his firm's growth forecast for 2011 to 3 to 3.5%, between what Congress is going to do and the Federal Reserve's ongoing quantitative easing, the economy should be doing just fine. I haven't established my own forecast yet, but it seems pretty clear to me there will be enough of a momentum heading into 2012, at which point the unemployment rate will finally be coming down and sentiment will be turning back in favor of Obama. It was going to be this way regardless of the amount of stimulus thrown out there. It's just the way this recovery was going to play out. Remember when I mentioned how on my trip to Australia and South Pacific I talked of a man sitting next to me on one of the flights who asked how we got out of our mess? I said, time. Time was going to be the answer all along, but now the timetable has been sped up. Okay, so consider the preceding part one. Many of you are probably wondering, hey, where is the gloomy editor? Fret not, dear readers, and now part two. The deficit, as you can see, is going to soar even further thanks to the new package, especially because some items such as the payroll tax cut are going to be awful hard to take away in the future. The bond market, totally ignoring the Fed's quantitative easing part deux and its $600 billion bond buying program, took interest rates for a ride this week, with the yield on the 10-year Treasury climbing above my target of 3.25% that I felt was the line of concern, so to speak. Yes, still historically low, no doubt, but the rate on a 30-year fixed mortgage hit 4.61% and will be close to 5% when this week's bond debacle is factored in for the next calculation. So rates aren't a help for real estate, and so much for another round of refinancings. I mean, look at the trend. The 10-year hit a low yield of 2.33% in October and is 100 basis points higher already. It's about an economy that might finally grow at a respectable clip, with possible inflation pressures, plus concerns over the deficit, the financing of same, and the stimulus just adding to future funding needs. Late Friday, the government also announced that the budget deficit for November was $150.4 billion, owing to the timing of payments for programs like Medicare and Social Security, another harbinger of red ink to come. Receipts did climb 12% in November, though, which is a good thing. Last week, I wrote that with the Deficit Commission's plan having been released and with 11 of 18 on the bipartisan panel voting for it, there was hope a consensus could form early next year to take some real steps to tackle this humongous issue. I still believe that can be the case, but some of the actions and stimulus, too, will make any solutions that much harder, unless you tell me solid growth indeed extends into 2012 and well beyond, at which point growing revenues would put a dent in the deficit, assuming Congress didn't just turn around and spend it all. But all of the preceding talk still comes down to two essential items, jobs and housing. If the economy grows at 3 to 3.5% next year, as everyone is suddenly rushing to forecast, the job picture will improve, albeit slightly. But real estate is a different matter. Some now say we have entered a double dip in housing, which is intellectually dishonest until we take out the spring 2009 lows and existing median home prices, but maybe that happens in the next few months. Just as importantly, however, is the fact that the percentage of homeowners with mortgages that are underwater, negative equity, is up to 23.2% according to Zillow Inc., up from 21.8% at the end of 2009. This obviously spells more foreclosures, and so the picture for 2011 does not look good. Also, if economist Nuriel Roubini is right, the ongoing problems in real estate mean the financial industry faces another $1 trillion in losses. Yes, there are so many cross currents these days, and it's not as if the European debt crisis has been resolved. In fact, this week, Euro leaders got together and couldn't agree on anything. Some are calling for a larger bailout fund than what has already been established. Others say there is no need for an additional $100 to $200 billion, which would require the politicians asking their electorates for more. The German Chancellor Angela Merkel is one who has ruled out both further funds as well as a proposal for the creation of a Europe-wide bond. So for now, finance ministers are counting on European Central Bank bond purchases to calm debt-spooked markets. What we saw instead this week is Ireland's parliament voted 82-77 to accept the draconian austerity plan that allows the country to access the bailout fund. It was protests spreading in the UK, Greece, and Spain. In the case of the first two, anarchists are taking advantage of issues such as tuition hikes to wreak havoc. And this is most disconcerting because the level of violence can be ratcheted up in a heartbeat when it comes to these pieces of shit. At least Spain's Prime Minister Zapatero may have had his Ronald Reagan Petco moment when Spain's air traffic controllers staged a wildcat strike, shutting down the system and stranding hundreds of thousands on a holiday weekend. Get this. Whereas the average U.S. air traffic controller earns $110,000, in Spain the average is $265,000. But wait, there's more. The controller struck because the government was eliminating overtime rules that allow these same guys to earn as much as $465,000. So the Spanish people were furious that in this time of austerity, these a-holes were being so incredibly greedy, and Zapatero, seizing the moment, has threatened to put offenders in jail, and for a long time. Nonetheless, the pictures out of Europe this week weren't good, and Greece faces a nationwide strike on December 15, while further protests in the UK are planned for Monday. By the way, nice job protecting the Prince of Wales and Camilla. It's all about dealing with severe financial stress caused by massive debts. Robert Samuelson, Washington Post. People who wonder what America's budget problem is ultimately about should look to Europe. In the streets of Dublin, Athens, and London, angry citizens are protesting government plans to cut programs and raise taxes. The social contract is being broken. People are furious. They feel betrayed. Modern democracies have created a new morality. Government benefits, once conferred, cannot be revoked. People expect them and consider them property rights. Just as government cannot randomly confiscate property, it cannot withdraw benefits without violating a moral code. The old-fashioned idea that government's policies should serve the national interest has given way to inertia and squatters' rights. Samuelson concludes, we need a new public philosophy that acknowledges these realities. Perhaps Bowles-Simpson will start the needed conversation. Government will be big, offending conservatives, but it also should be limited, offending liberals. The social contract will be rewritten either by design or, as in Europe, under outside pressures. If we keep the expedient morality of perpetual programs so that nothing fundamental can ever be abandoned, then Europe's social unrest could be a prelude to our own. On to China. At week's end, the government reported another string of strong numbers. Imports in November rose 37.7%. Exports surged 34.9%. Estimates of growth for 2011 range from the World Bank's 8.7% to 9.6% from the IMF to 10% from a leading Chinese think tank. But China faces an inflation issue, which I'm on record as saying is close to peaking, but nonetheless is a major government concern. A report in the China Daily also talked of real estate being overvalued by 30 to 50% in 11 of 35 major cities. I do not believe China's property bubble is going to lead to a collapse in economic turmoil. Prices will come down, but I've taken the stand that chaos will be averted. On inflation, though, Morgan Stanley Asia's Stephen Roach said this week, quote, the longer government policymakers wait to address inflation, the tougher it will be to deal with. My advice is move quickly and aggressively to deal with inflation so you can get on with the most important transition in China, which is stimulating internal private consumption. Friday night, China announced consumer prices for November rose at a 5.1% clip, the fastest in 28 months. An interest rate hike to slow the economy seems certain. Industrial output accelerated to 13.3% in November as well, and retail sales gained 18.7%. But on the issue of a rising China's recent ornery behavior, From an editorial in The Economist, quote, "The best way to turn China into an opponent is to treat it as one. The dangers that spats and rows will sour relations between China and America, just as the friendship between Germany and Britain crumbled in the decades before the First World War, is already happening in defense. Feeling threatened by American naval power, China has been modernizing its missiles, submarines, radar, cyber warfare, and anti-satellite weapons. Now America feels on its mettle. Recent Pentagon assessments of China's military strength warn of the threat to Taiwan and American bases and to aircraft carriers near the Chinese coast. The U.S. Navy has begun to deploy more forces in the Pacific. Feeling threatened anew, China may respond. Even if neither America nor China intended harm, if they wanted only to ensure their own security, each could nevertheless see the other as a growing threat. Some would say the solution is for America to turn its back on military rivalry. But a weaker America would lead to chronic insecurity in East Asia and thus threaten the peaceful conduct of trade and commerce on which America's prosperity depends. America therefore needs to be strong enough to guarantee the seas and protect Taiwan from Chinese attack." Stocks finished higher, with the Dow Jones up just 0.2% to 11,410, but the S&P 500 rose 1.3% and NASDAQ advanced another 1.8%. The tax cut compromise helped, as did a return of some animal spirits out of bonds and into stocks. On Friday, General Electric and Honeywell also raised their dividends, a sign of confidence the worst is behind us. And that's all for this week. I'll be back with you Saturday, December 18th. Have a good one. For further details, go to stocksandnews.com and click on Week in Review. Take care.